Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good evening, and welcome to The Man's Voice. I'm trying to get rid of this music right quick, but what a... Started the show out by welcoming all those that are listening. I looked at the list, and there's several people that's on the line right now, came in early. We want to thank you for that. Remember, as we go through the show tonight, those of you that are listening in, if you want to get involved with us and talk to us and have comments on our discussion, call us at 646-668-8700. But I want to start off tonight by just bringing up something that I think, you know, men, as men, we should talk about, and that's health issues. One of the things I thinking, you know, that most people, we know, we never say it, but we know that women live a lot longer than men do. We also know that the government supports a lot of women's causes and health issues for women, but there's not a lot of departments of federal government that are helping or talking about men and giving men assistance in the same way they do women, when actually men die earlier from like 9 of the top 10 causes of death, you know, diabetes, cancer, stroke, heart disease, lung disease. Men are the ones who are the brunt of these diseases and die for, you know, their mates. And we need to put something out there for men to not feel that asking for help is not manly. I mean, I remember when my father, you know, he hated hospitals. He would go to the hospital and get sick and didn't feel that men should do that. So let's have that discussion. Why don't you start off, Bruce, talking a little bit about men and health issues and why are we so scared to tell people we're sick?
Well, you're right about that, David, and the rest of our panel members and listeners. We tend, if you want to paint us with a manly brush, we tend to think, oh, you know, we're stronger. We also recognize that, indeed, we're not stronger in a lot of ways. And that doesn't mean physical strength. That means being able to be comfortable with the uncomfortable things, like a hospital, like asking the questions, like divulging the information. And my dad, of all people, taught me before he passed away that he said many times the person that appears to be the weakest is the strongest. And he told me, don't be afraid to ask a question to solve a problem, even if you think it's not manly or manly. Don't be afraid of doing that. And that, in my early adulthood, that changed a lot for me. So I think you're exactly right when you said we tend to think as a broad brush that somehow that's not manly enough, and that's really just the opposite.
Well, I think it's causing some major issues in that we're leaving our families, you know, because we're too manly to say we're sick.
Or proud, or whatever word you want to use.
Well, yeah, let's use the word proud. So, Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I equate it kind of to the syndrome of, you know, asking for directions. And God forbid, if a man gets lost, they're going to ask for directions because, you know, they're going to find it on their own and they're going to use whatever means they have at their disposal to find it on their own. And they don't like asking for directions when they get lost. And I think it's similar to taking care of, you know, healthcare and taking care of yourself and your body. I think in general terms, you know, of course there's exceptions, but we tend to not take as good a care of ourselves and kind of not take things for granted, but just think that we're invincible, I guess, maybe you can say. And eventually it catches up. I mean, I'm a testament to that. And I, you know, I thought I was invincible for years, and now at 52, everything is starting to go downhill, and I'm like, well, shoot, I should have taken better care of myself a few years ago. And, you know, and even today, you know, I'm stubborn. I guess stubborn is another word you can use. And I'll have chest pain from time to time, and I'll attribute it to heartburn and say, you know, the heck with it. I don't need to go to the hospital. I have been, you know, so I've gotten that tested. But, you know, I think a little bit of stubbornness too.
All right. Harold, what are your thoughts on that?
And I agree. I am, and I will put myself up there. I am one of those who don't like going to the doctor. But as you said, we're leaving our families a little bit earlier than our counterpart, our females and our women. And it's a stigma of going to the doctor is a sign of sometimes in our culture, the African-American culture, is a sign of weakness. We're supposed to be strong men. We're supposed to be providers. And if we're out for any significant time, we feel like we're letting our families down. But in the long run, we're letting them down when we die off early, not having insurance to take care of the family once we go. And it also goes to the insurance premiums that men have to pay more so than women. And if you notice over the last 15 years, they've really been talking more about men's health and prostate cancer, getting yourself checked. When women, they've always known, okay, when I become a young lady, I have my menstrual cycle, I go to the doctor, I have to get my annual, I have to get my breast exam. So those things are ingrained in their head, but only with men when we get a little older. Then they start talking about, because you're getting older, you need prostate screening, you need high blood pressure screening. But women, it's ingrained in them early to go and get their checkups.
I think one of the things that men don't do is take care of their sons on this issue. If your daughter has an issue, the mother will take her to a gynecologist right away. But if a son has an issue, he doesn't even know that he doesn't know how to talk to the fathers. There's a void, I think, between men and their sons in terms of health issues, because the father is saying, be manly, don't give us these kind of talk, whereas the mother will tell the daughter, you're a lot of issues and you're different and we need to handle those. I think we need to, as men, start at an earlier age with our kids talking about health issues, especially with our sons. Our sons are our kids.
And David, and I agree with you, and that's one of the things I've been doing with my son. You know, he can come talk to me if he's having issues in his groin area, anything, he talks to us, and we take him to the doctor. He's an athlete, so we have to make sure that he's healthy and doing all those things. So I've done that. I've talked to him about it. My wife has talked to him. So, you know, he's more apt, but I agree with you. We need to start talking to our young men, taking them to the doctors with us. So that's one of the things that will help negate that stigma of men going to the doctor.
Right. Don, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am, David. How you doing?
Good, sir. Talk about this. How do you feel about men and their health issues? I mean, I know that you're in the marketing field, and I see a lot of commercials. I see a lot of things about women, but I don't see a lot of, and you know, I don't see a lot of things about men, and I want to get into after this though the cost of medicine, but I don't see a lot of marketing for men being healthy, all kinds of marketing for women and being healthy, and you know, government gives women money and everything for this. Why is that in that field we don't do that?
David, you're all in my house, and I know you don't live here, but I am a victim of advertising myself. I finally listened to what I've been preaching. Friday, I had a colonoscopy, and I finally went to the doctor to have a colonoscopy. I'm over 50 years old, and the doctor asked me, "Don, what took you so long?" And I had to think about that. The fear set in, first of all, and procrastination set in. And after going through the process on Friday, my wife took me and they gave me some of this, I guess that drug Michael Jackson took, knocked me out cold. And I finally came to and I said, when are we going to get started? The doctor said, it's all over. We've done it already. And it was a sigh of relief when the doctor said, you're well, you're doing great, no sign of cancer. And I said to myself, why did I wait so long? And here today you come with a program like this. I think we as men are hard-headed. I'm speaking about Don, and you just jump in where you fit in. But I was hard-headed, David. I mean, I'm in the field of healthcare, medicine, advertising, and I procrastinated all those years, and I should have gone earlier. And I wish I would have gone earlier. But I know today that I'm going to have that check every 4 to 5 years.
Right. A lot of men are afraid to go to the doctor. Is it that we don't want to hear that we're – I think we don't want to hear that we're sick because that means we can't take care.
I think that was the first phase for me. And my spirituality tells me – God has not given me a spirit of fear, but a power, love, and a sound mind. But the thing is, procrastination took over fear. You know, not me. You know, it won't happen to me. And you know, I'm okay. I feel good. And we use all kinds of excuses.
Well, the number one reason men don't go to the doctor, they polled and they found out the number one reason is men say they don't have time.
And yeah, that's an excuse, David.
That's true. You're going to not have your time when you pass away, for real. But we need to get to the doctors. I mean, very rarely do you see a man saying, I need to go get a flu shot or I have the flu or something like that. And we get it like anyone else, but we'll have it and go to work and spread it around. It's a problem, and I don't know what we should do about it. I do know that we should train our younger men on if you have issues and you need help, talk to us, and let's go get this fixed. I mean, I think because we used to tell young men, you don't get sick. That is not manly to be sick. If it's not, you get out of bed and you go to school, and we don't want to hear this. We need to change that mantra that I think we grew up with. There's too many diseases out there and others. It's not like it used to be. There are tons more things going on with our families that we need to. We don't have the professionalism. We can't make. We can't take you to the kitchen now and put lemon and water and sugar and salt on the stove and make those remedies that used to cover the diseases that they had back then because too many things have come out. I want to talk about that a little more. One of the biggest things that cause men issues is holding all this in. Some researchers in Germany did a research on this and found that men who hold all this in because they don't want to discuss it have a higher risk of developing ills like hypertension and cancer. And so there's been a lot of research over the years about these type of diseases and things and what's causing them. And I think we just need to start talking about it. I want to put that out there. I don't know. Say, Ron, why don't you pick up on that and then Bruce and Harold, just talk about this. Because I think we need to tell people we need to get past this. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I think in general, again, generalizing, which I hate to do, but I think men don't like to share as much as women do. For example, in relationships, you know, the women are much more prone to share their feelings, whereas men don't. And that's, you know, I think that's just the way it is. I'm not sure how evolution came to be that way, but I think that's just the way it is. And I think that translates to every aspect of our lives. But, you know, and I've seen this even with my own father, who never wanted to go to the hospital, never wanted to go to the doctor, and always wanted to portray this image of, you know, that I'm strong, I'm invincible. But yet when he really got sick, he was, I mean, I hate to say this, I love my dad to death, but he was a wimp, you know, and my mother was stronger than he was when she was ill. So I think it's a facade that a lot of men put up, and maybe it's just the way that our upbringing. But, you know, I think, again, you know, it goes back to not being as open and sharing of feelings that translates to everything we do.
Right. Bruce, can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, I think a lot of what Ron said, I definitely agree with. And you've got to find ways to connect. My dad found a way to connect with me on those touchy subjects that we've been talking about today. And I have then found a way to communicate and find my delivery system to my son. You know, for example, he's in mechanics, and when he was in the service, he was air support and all of that. So I tend to put it with him on, you know, you were talking about the hypertension, all that. That's, you know, if your brain is the engine and you redline the engine, you're bound to have some problems with that. So I try to relate, at least to get the dialogue going. I try to relate to him and to myself on things that you know. And I keep going back to the example my dad set for me. When he was younger and I was younger, he was, yeah, you don't get sick or you don't show it or this or that. But later in his years, when we were one-on-one a lot of times, his demeanor was totally different. And he found a way to connect with me on some of these kinds of subjects. And he says, you know, you don't neglect signs that come with symptoms in your body of illness or pain or something like that. You get that checked out. You make sure you get that done. So he was also just the opposite in many ways in that way. And I would kind of look at him and go, really? And I said, are you the same dad that I grew up with? And yeah. And so I thought the lesson he taught me was try to find a way to connect with the person that you're trying to talk with on a very touchy subject or an embarrassing subject.
All right. Okay. I'm going to ask a couple of questions, and I'm going to go through and try to get people's answers to answer this question. My dad still likes to hoops with me, but he doesn't move like he used to. Do I school him?
No, he's not there. He's not there to shoot hoops with you, really.
But he's moving slow and stuff. Do I tell him? Or do I not? Harold, what do you think?
I don't think you tell him. Was that Bruce that was just talking? For me, my dad liked to play golf. And when I was growing up, I hated to go out there with him. I just hated it. But every morning at 5:30, he would get me up to go out and play golf. And when he was growing up, you know, men did show a lot of love and appreciation for one another. So I think that's his way of just being out there with his son and showing pride that my son is with me and I'm doing stuff with my son. Even though he can't move as much as he wants, you still go out there. You meet him a few times, but don't tell him. It's just like my son.
Yeah.
My son always challenges me to a game of basketball. My son, you ain't ready for this. Knowing good and well, I can't keep up with a 16-year-old, especially an athlete like that. But it's just that father-son time that we all need. And my nephew plays golf to this day, and we go play golf, and I talk as much smack as I can, knowing he kills me every time. But they won't know that, you know, I'm going to suck at it, but I'm just going to be out there with him.
Mr. Wiggins, what do you think?
Well, first of all, David?
Yes.
First of all, I'm going to say one thing. You are so blessed to have a dad you can play with. Number one, and then number two, you're just looking at a glimpse of what's to come.
That's true. That is so true. Okay, here's another question. Now, you've been mentoring a person, a young guy. He comes to you and says he wants to know if he should worry that his girlfriend is always going out for drinks with their coworkers, but the problem that bugs him is they're all guys. How are you going to answer that question? Mr. Wiggins, how are you going to answer that? What are you going to tell him?
That's a tough one there, David. That's a tough one. You know, when I used to go out and have a drink, I didn't act too good once I got finished drinking. So that's the first thing that would come to mind. And I'd tell him, wait a minute, I don't want you going drinking with him anymore because I remember how I used to act. So that's kind of hard for me.
Okay.
Because if I start drinking, Dave, I'd tear the bar up.
Bruce, I hear you laughing. What would you say?
Yeah. I would agree with what he said other than I wouldn't get violent, and I doubt that he would get all that violent. But I definitely will admit, though, that it would bother me. And part of you wants to say that the center of every great relationship, whether it's with a partner, a spouse, a father, a mother, is trust, T-U-R-S-T. And if you trust them, then it doesn't mean you can't ask questions. It doesn't mean you can't try to find out, well, why are you going out with these guys, your, quote, coworkers, so much? Is it something that I'm not, providing? I mean, do you feel like I shut you out? I don't give you enough time? I'm too busy? What? And try and find out the root of it first and foremost. And that all that does is provide more discovery and will strengthen your relationship if it's a good one that needs to be strengthened. If it's fraught and loaded with a lot of jealousy and innuendo and total distrust, there's a good chance that that relationship may never grow into what you want it to be. So in a roundabout way, I'm saying, would it bother me? Yeah, it would, to be honest. But would I stop it? I try to stop it by finding out what haven't I done that she's looking for in me that she's getting from somebody else.
What about you, Ron?
Yeah, I actually couldn't agree more. And it's not jealousy, although I do have to admit there would be some jealousy. But, and I agree with that, you know, if you have trust, you know, that's the foundation of a solid relationship. But beyond the trust, I would be upset as heck if she was going out, not even every night, just like every other night or a few times a week with coworkers, and leaving me out of the picture, because I would, you know, I would be upset that I'm not part of her life, you know, in that way that she would want to include me. So again, you know, like you said, Bruce, I want to know what the problem is. And see if there's anything that can be done about it. And if not, you know, then maybe it wasn't a good relationship to begin with.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, I would just invite myself along and try to get acquainted with her crew so that I could feel comfortable and, you know, see what her reaction is, see how she reacts. Maybe I'll make some new friends, and then I will know how I feel about the situation.
No, Dave. Whoa, David, no, don't do that.
Why not?
Don't invite yourself. In some ways she might feel like she's under attack. You don't trust me. You doesn't mean you can't do it, but find another way to have her invite you.
Or David, what you need to do, David, is find a bunch of girls and go out with them every other night.
Oh, jeez.
You get ready to
start. Oh, yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
not with
women, it wouldn't work.
It'll work once, and then it's over.
Wow. All right. I have a question. Harold, this is for you. A young man comes to you and he says, I feel like such a fraud. With this Easter Bunny and Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus stuff, my kid is 6 years old. Do I tell him the truth or do I just play along with it? What are you going to say, Harold?
Well, for me, actually, my daughter actually caught us one day putting money under her pillow. And so she knew, I think she was about 5 or 6. But I think we, you know, we have talked about this, touched on this before. You have to be up and honest with
Harold,
your kids.
You're fading out a little bit on us.
Don, can you hear me now?
Okay, there you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I got
it. I would say you have to be up and upfront and honest with your kids. Like when we tell them Christmas, you know, God provides for us to give through you. So we are the Santa Claus. And we tell them the real meaning of Christmas, the real meaning of Easter. We don't give them the things of that time. Say if it's Easter, we didn't stop giving them Easter baskets and things of that nature and the Easter egg hunts. We also told them the real meaning of those holidays. So we have to make sure that they understand the real meaning and the symbolism behind it. So I would say be upfront and honest with them. Don't ruin their childhood if it's not necessary, but just let them know the real meaning. And that's what my wife and I did.
Don, I know that you have a young kid living with you. How would you answer this question?
Well, first of all, David, I'm glad you clarified the age, because when they're young, they're so impressionary. They got a lot of influence of television and other people and other young people. But the thing I would say to them is the truth. I would tell them the truth, similar to what my brother just said. I tell them where the source comes from, number one. And number two, I explain to what the original intent of the holiday was. And then I tell them the truth, because I still remember my dad telling me that Santa Claus brought me this, and I knew darn well wasn't no big fat guy going to come down a chimney like that. We didn't have a chimney. It was a small chimney if we had one. But the thing is, I tell them the truth, to be truthful with it.
You know, I think, in my opinion, if a child is 6 years old and they still feel that way, that there may be, I would, you know, play along with it until I get to the point where they ask me, and then I would answer the question. That would be my way of handling it. But I have a question for, I know that all, I have a question for, let me give this to Bruce. Your neighbors are out of town, and their 15-year-old son threw a big rocking party that disturbed the whole neighborhood until like 3 o'clock in the morning. Do you tell your neighbors who are friends of yours when they get back?
Well, first of all, I tell my son what he didn't do right.
No, it's not your son. No, it's your neighbor's son.
Oh, it's your neighbor's son? So,
all
right.
Okay.
I got it now.
Okay.
Yes, I would tell him. But I try to culture a friend where he may be erratic with me. He might verbally try to say, not my son. But I always try to couch it in a way that, look, I'm not, as we hear so many times, I'm not mad with your son. You've got a great family. We're neighbors. We've always gotten along. But I got to tell you that this behavior, maybe it just got out of hand. I don't know. But you need to talk to him about it. If he hasn't told you, you need to find out, because not only was I upset, but all the neighbors around you were, and no one else wants to talk to you about it. But I will. I go through that right now. I'm a president of our condo board, and I've got a lot of people that will call me, but they won't do anything about it. You go call them. You go tell them. So I think it's how you couch it. That's all. In the end, that's all you can do is try to put it in a friendly. If you're friends with your neighbor, which you should be, if it's a good friend, a good neighbor, couch it in those words. And if he wants to still get mad at you, I can live with that.
What
about
you, Harold? What would you do?
Well, I'm going to say this. I actually did that.
Uh-oh. I'm not going to like the answer, am I?
But my parents were on a cruise, and I had in my mind they were coming back, say, I think it was the 11th. But they actually came back on the 10th.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, I took flyers to the neighbors, let them know that I was having a party.
Oh, they knew my
parents was out of town, but my parents came back right in the middle of the party. And the streets were blocked, cars everywhere, hundreds of kids everywhere. So the next morning, my dad made me and all of my friends come back to the house, went four blocks cleaning up the neighborhood. So I would tell my son, let me know that you're going to do it. If it's my neighbor, I would tell my neighbor, hey, this is what happened. I would be one of those neighbors who will watch out for them, knowing that their parents are not home, just to make sure nothing happens. And so it was an interesting next couple of weeks for me at my house.
Wait a minute. Who is that wild rebel that just talked?
That was Harold.
Harold?
Uh-huh.
Oh, Harold. Oh, you're in a whale of trouble now. let me put a caveat on the situation. Okay, now that what your father did, kudos to him. But what if that party, as we perceive, I won't say everybody does, but we will perceive underage drinking or worse yet, drugs or worse yet, another subject. What if one or all of those started to happen? Then what do you expect to happen?
Oh,
in other words, your party got way out of hand.
Well, I would probably not have been here.
That's a good answer.
But
because can happen.
Yeah, I would have faced a lot of consequences. But the people that I hung with, you know, we had a good reputation in school. But, you know, the element that comes in, you can't control that. But
yes, you can.
You know,
no. Yes, you can. You shut the party down. Don't tell me you can't control it.
Well, at that point, I wasn't trying to control it, but I understand you can control it. You can shut it down. And so,
yeah.
But a good thing about it is I was part of, and Dave would know this, the police explorers. So the police that came by, they were patrolling, watching, making sure nothing happened. So, yeah, I was part of that program. So they came by patrolling, made sure nothing got out of control. And plus, I had older cousins that were of age that was there too. So that was my alibi.
Well, you're gutsy even to bring it up. So I applaud you for that.
All right. So, Don, what would you do?
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's a tough one. I think the same thing happened to me. That who was that just spoke?
That was Harold.
Harold, that was the same thing happened to me. I planned a party and my parents came home early and caught me with me and my friends. Well, you know, back then I didn't have the right kind of friends. I gave them nicknames. Killer, Bobo, and Snake.
Oh, man.
So you can imagine how that party looked. And, I wasn't too nice of a guy when I was young. I was kind of radical. And God changed my life, I guess. Well, I know so. But anyway, I don't know how I would. I don't know. I don't like that day. The next day, David, because I wouldn't be here talking to you and the rest of the fellas if God didn't have mercy on my dad and me.
Right.
Because I got the whooping of a lifetime. My God. Oh.
What about you, Ron? What would you do? Can we go to the neighbor? I know your neighbor next door is not going to have a big. Well, he might. He could have an extraterrestrial.
Yeah. I was actually hoping that you would skip me because I mean I can understand everybody's viewpoint so far, but I don't think that I would say anything to the parents. I think it depends on the age of the kid too. I mean, if it's I guess the older, the less I would say. But if 15, it was somebody,
15-year-old kid, 15-year-old, he's 15.
15. It would depend on. I guess it would depend on, you know, how out of control the party got, how many people were there. I mean, if we're talking about maybe, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 friends and nothing got out of control, I probably wouldn't say anything.
All right. What do the other guys say? I have a question, Don. Whatever happened to Killer Bobo and Snake?
Say that again? Say it again?
Whatever happened to Killer Bobo and Snake, where are they today?
Dead.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So the whooping you got from your dad saved your life. I can relate. I got my hind end tanned a few times myself, really bad.
Yeah, Bruce, you know what? It really saved my life because those three guys are now dead. He told me, quit hanging with those guys.
Matt, let me make one comment to strengthen your position, Harold. Is I've done a little bit of mentoring in my life, one of the most worthwhile things I've ever done. I've even mentored some gang members. And what one of the big, tough, tough gang members told me, one-on-one, alone, out of earshot of all his friends, he said, I wish my parents would have put limits on me. You know, they saw that as love. And if you didn't have any limits, it was lack thereof of love.
Right. So, what do you guys think about that? Harold, comment on that for me, because I have some thoughts on that also, but what are your thoughts?
I broke up. I couldn't hear.
Oh, I'm sorry. How about Don?
Hey, David, you know what? I think in every incident in my life, I always look at, Don, what part did you play? And me, myself, I wanted to be a people pleaser. And I wanted to always blend in. And I figured by me giving a party, I would be the big fella. I could blend in. I could be popular. But there was a lady down the street. I knew she was watching me. I knew it. She was watching everything I did, but she told my parents. So after that episode, it was a strong awakening for me, because when my dad got done with me, I mean, what made it so bad, David, he had me go back in the backyard. We had a weeping willow tree back there, and he didn't go pick the leaf or the branch, he had me go pick it. And it was a small one. So he said, no, go back and get another one. And it was a bigger one. And let me tell you, from that day forth, I learned my lesson.
You don't like willow trees.
I don't like weeping willow trees.
Weeping willow. That's why they call them weeping.
Well, you know what? I think that I would probably clue the parents in, but I wouldn't talk bad about the kid. I would just say, you know, that this was happening at your house, and I wouldn't hold it against the kid at any. I would just say, you know, this was one of those things a 15-year-old would do. I would think that the people would probably not think highly of me if I didn't. You know that. They won't hold it against me because I didn't tell them, but they wouldn't think highly of me either. So I think I would probably just kindly clue them in that it happened without talking bad about their child, you know?
You don't want to attack their children, because a lot of people will push back. But if you explain the incident or that, and then they ask, well, who started it all, then you got to be honest, but you still don't attack their child. You're just telling this is what it was. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Right. Okay, Don, I'm going to give you this question. young man comes to you and he says, because you're in the church, so is Harold, so this is one of those questions I need to get how you guys would answer this question. A young man comes to you and say, I fooled around with one of my coworkers on a business trip, and I'm worried my wife is going to find out about it. Should I tell her or shouldn't I tell her? What would you tell that guy?
Oh, my God, David.
What are you doing today?
What are you around the bush, David?
These are things that let me say this. Those of you that are listening that might have to have answers or want to join the conversation, give us a call at 646-668-8740, and I'll come in and talk to you, and then you'll find out what you want to say and get you on the show. So give us a call, 646-668-8740, while I have Harold and Don squirming in their seat. Don,
you know what? David, you know what? This is an answer that everybody has to answer for themselves.
Because,
see, God has given each man the measure of faith. Now, if you would have asked me that about 20 years ago, my faith would not have been that strong to say, tell my wife. No. I try to stay away from putting myself in those type of situations today, because when you know better, you do better. But the thing is, I don't think I'd tell her. God.
I'm not asking you if you would do it. I'm saying a young man comes to you and says, this has happened to him because he wants to get your view because you are more spiritual, and he wants to get from you. I did this, and I'm asking you, should I tell my wife? What would you tell him?
Well, like I said, it depends on the level of his faith. His faith may not be strong as mine. And another thing, too, I don't know where he and his wife's relationship, what state it may be in. So what I say may impact his total life. I don't know. I think I would ask more questions of him and where he is in his faith walk and his morality and so forth. If she doesn't know about it, you're going to have to wait until I think she confronts you with it. And then when she confronts you with it, tell the truth.
Yeah,
okay.
And I agree. I agree. Based upon their marital status and their relationship and trust,
right.
I would first have him go seek spiritual counseling and do that first, knowing that it's not going to be a good situation. And then once he feels comfortable enough, knowing that the end result is going to be either she forgives you and stays with you, or she forgives you and divorces you, that's going to be something that you have to deal with. But you need first counseling, spiritual counseling. Then you need to decide in yourself if that's what you're willing to do right then and there.
All right.
I concur.
Bruce,
amen. I agree.
Bruce, what would you say? I know you do mentoring. If one of the people, one of the guys you're mentoring, it could be a man or a woman that say this. You know, but they come and ask you that they fooled around and they want to know if they should tell their significant other the truth or come out and tell them. What would you say?
I think it was Ron and Don that was talking, and I agree with everything they said. I would just add to it, give it my personal slant. Is many times you want to try and figure out why that person's coming to you. Do they just need someone to talk to? Do they want you to validate what they did, which I wouldn't do, but they might be thinking that. Did what I do, was it really all that bad? Yeah, it was, but he or she might be struggling with that. But in listening to the two of them talk, I don't think I'm smart enough or intelligent enough or have the right, maybe is the better word, have the right to take a high-speed mix master and put it right in the middle of the cake mix. because I may not know, I think someone else said, I may not know the history of their marriage. I may not know how fragile it is, how strong it is. And I don't have the right to just drop in there and give them the truth, which it would be, without any empathy and feeling and background. I almost look at it, listening to you guys talk, that do I have the right to kind of mess up God's way of taking care of this? If I do, maybe he says, okay, but you want to be in charge? Go ahead. Screw their life up. Excuse my French. I don't think I have the right to give them some advice, but don't mess up.
And you know something else, Bruce? I think that I would ask the person that I'm mentoring some questions too. Well, why did you do that? What made you do that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You say you've been married 35 years? Why would you want to do that? You've been married a year? Well, are you sure you love her? I'd ask questions. He would give his own answer. He'd give the only answer that he needed to get by me asking questions.
That's right. If you're a real friend, that's what you do.
Okay. We started off the show talking about medical issues and those kinds of things. Now I want to figure out, I want to see how many people know this answer. Let's go to Bruce. Bruce, tell me the difference between an MD and a DO, because I'm noticing that when I go visit doctors, there are a lot more DOs now than there were before. I mean, there seems to be more DOs than MDs. What is a DO versus an MD?
Well, to me, an MD, is kind of a general overall health advisor and mentor, since we're on that subject, to you. Knows more of the intimacy of your health, your diseases, the approach you want to take to keeping yourself healthy, et cetera, et cetera. Or a DO, I see more as a specialist that doesn't take that overall view. Neither doesn't mean one's better than the other. It just means that I like the MD approach just to start with. And many times, that's as far as I need to go.
What about you, Ron? Can you tell me the difference between a DO and an MD?
Well, in all honesty, I've never even heard the term DO, so I really can't say. I mean, I just know MD.
Well, if you look at most of the hospitals now, I would say more than 50% of them tell you that your doctor are DOs, not MDs. What about you, Harold? Do you know the difference between a DO and an MD?
I'm actually looking
it
up
now.
Because I had not seen DO.
I guess I live in a city where there are a lot of there's a university here, but the university doesn't really graduate DOs. They graduate MDs. But if you look at these new health books that you get and stuff, you're seeing about 50% of the people that give you medicine now are DOs. They're not MDs anymore. What about you, Don? Do you know the difference between a DO and an MD?
No, I'm going to be quiet. I didn't want to expose my ignorance.
All right. Well,
David, it's saying that the DO tends to practice medicine in an urban metropolitan area, more so than a rural area. And then they have to take 200 hours of training in a muscular skeletal system. So the DMs and the DMs and the DOs vary in their training, but they're still medical doctors. They both do 4 years, and they do residency.
Yes.
So the only thing different is where they practice.
Well, a DO is a doctor who's been trained to be a medical doctor, but his training is different in that in the DO, they first consider the person within the patient, not the patient. They're more trying to get out of you how you live, what is your lifestyle, all those kinds of things. The DO is more handling, whereas an MD is basically medicine. They only deal with medicine, whereas an MD is just, you know, a doctorate of medicine, whereas a DO is a doctor of osteopathic medicine, which is more within your mind. What is causing this? Why are you depressed? Or is your depression causing this illness? Where a DO is just going to write your prescription for your thing. So that's the difference. I'm glad I'm getting more DOs.
And David, here's another difference. It says DOs are trained to be more holistic in their approach to medicine.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Well, right. you'll have some doctors that are both. Mine happens to be both. And I do like that holistic approach when I can do something naturally versus man-made medicine.
One of the things about I know that a lot of men nowadays are working out. And that's very important. But how, unless you play golf, which is walking, and that's good, basketball, but if it isn't a sport thing, just to go out and work out in the gym and things, you don't see men after college doing that much anymore, but that'll actually help save your life. And so what is that? Why is it that we don't do that? I know that Ron does. He works out, but I'm not sure how many of the others do. Do you guys work out? And if you do, they seem to, the benefit of working out is just when you get through, you feel so good. And everyone knows that, but we can't seem to do it. Why is that? What do you think, Bruce?
Well, I hate to tell our illustrious leader, no, that's not right. Again, but you wanted a informed panel, so we're informed. But I will agree with you that there's more women than men, but I still see a lot of men on bicycles, walking, various kinds of in the gym, various kinds of physical exercise. So I wouldn't agree that it's super one-sided. It favors the women, though, however. I'll agree with you on that.
All right. Well, let me talk about this issue that I've noticed recently. Medicine is flying up the scale. It drives me crazy that people who once 5 to 6 years ago could afford their medicine can't afford it anymore. I was shocked to find out that if you have kidney disease, your medicine is probably about $6,000 a month for that particular medical issue, kidney disease. I remember HIV patients could not afford because it was too expensive. But these medicines at one time were reasonable and people could afford them. Now they've gotten out of control. And when I did some research, I found out that it's not costing that much to make medicine. It's the people that have invested in the companies that want a bigger profit. So I don't know where it is, because there's kind of federal guidelines about everything except this issue, that people cannot afford to live. And that's a deep, deep thought for me, that people can't afford the medicine to help them live. Medicines are just skyrocketing, only to the investors' pockets, and they'd rather see you die. Where is the point where we start taking control of them? What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Well, you know, I personally think that there should be a cap on medications. I mean, I can tell you that I'm fortunate enough that with my job, I have fairly decent health insurance, where I pay $7 or $10 for prescription pills that I take on a regular basis. But I know that there's a lot of people that have to pay a lot more than I do
For example, I have a friend that used to have to take, I forget the name of the medication, but it was for bipolar disorder. And then the insurance company stopped paying for it. And when he went to go purchase the medication on his own, they told him it was going to be $350 for a 30-day supply, 30 pills. And guess what happened? He didn't buy it. And just like him, there's a lot of people, and I've seen it at pharmacies, that people that are bypassing taking their medications because they can't pay for it. So I would put a cap somehow on all medication.
And David, and I'm a perfect example. I went to a new doctor, and we were trying to get my diabetes under control, and she sent me to the pharmacy for this new diabetic medicine, $1,200.
Ooh,
and
wow.
That's with insurance.
Yikes.
And so my wife and I have this conversation all the time. How do people who don't have medical insurance make it in this society? And you hit it right on the head. It's all about the money. It's about these politicians being in the pockets of these pharmaceutical companies who take the drugs that I may have gotten. I didn't get it, by the way, that I may have gotten may have cost $6 to make. But they're charging $1,200 for, and that was just for a 30-day supply.
It's called greed.
Yes, but where do we – there's no line to – I mean, there's nobody looking at this. The politicians are running for offices right now. Nobody is talking about that because I think the lobbyists are out there keeping them quiet. We need to get this word out that we need – something needs to happen because people are dying because they can't afford the medication.
Our gentleman said, I don't remember which one it was, that you'd like to think you could get them all to coalesce and agree and tell them, look, guys, you're playing with fire, but even worse as far as making people make life and death choices. There's only one. You're not supposed to be making those choices. And if they just say, well, it's not me, but let's be realistic that it was said that maybe there's caps that need to be put on certain things, and that's it. There's no thinking about it. It's just this is the max. You can't go any higher than that, period. And then that takes the thought, the politics out of it.
You know, you brought up something very interesting, and I'd like to get a comment from someone on this issue. How is it, and I don't want to get political, how is it that we, being the richest country in the world the most powerful country in the world, and we got countries like Canada with free health care for its citizens, and we don't have it? Can someone help me on that?
Well, we need to bring that topic up when we come back again. Obviously, we've got about 90 seconds left in the show. Does anybody can answer that real quick before the 90 seconds are up?
No.
I think it's
part of the next show.
Yeah.
Well, I think let's start off with that next time. But I want to thank everyone who is listening in to our show tonight. And for panelists, wow, the lady won't give up. we're here every Sunday. For those that are listening, we're here every Sunday at 6 o'clock. From 6 to 7, join us. And those that are on the West Coast, that's 3 o'clock your time. And that seems to be an issue out there. People have called me and said, you forget because it's, 6 o'clock your time. And you keep saying 6 o'clock, but when I look at 6 o'clock, you're not even there. And people even next door, in some of the states next door to us, it'll be 5 o'clock Central Time. So we love to have you with us. We see that a lot of people that are listening and not a lot of people wanting to jump in, but we're going to fix that. We're going to try to get you in. I'm going to come in and ask some people just to give us some comments on what we're talking about. But for everyone, thanks for coming in. For the panelists, have a nice week. We will see you again next week.
Everybody have a great week. Have a great week, everybody.
Pray for my city, Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
Right. Good week, everyone.
Hanging in there.
Yeah, thanks. Took the time to listen to all your shows. This one would have been on the top of most of it.
Well, good.